Thank you so much for calling us and texting us here at Raider Nation Radio. We absolutely love it. It's the morning tailgate here on Raider Nation Radio 920. 702-365-9200 is the number here on R&R 920. And we'll get to more thoughts and calls after about 15, 20 minutes. We talked to Marcus Johnson here from Tape Don't Lie on YouTube as we're getting your thoughts, your personal thoughts on your Mount Rushmore players only for the Raiders. Fantastic stuff coming in here, and we'll get to them all here before the show ends. 702-365-9200. And Marcus Johnson joins us now from Tape Don't Lie on YouTube. Do yourself a favor and subscribe to Tape Don't Lie on YouTube. Fantastic content, Raiders only, that comes out all the time with Marcus Johnson and Matt Holder and a whole cast of crew of experts and knowledgeable film experts that look in deep inside and find some great profile information and look ahead for prospects, schedules, and so much more. And Marcus joins us here on Raider Nation Radio. Good morning, Marcus. Thank you for joining us here on R&R 920. You know what? We started talking about, you know, like the, you know, where the Raiders defensive line starts ranking among the rest of the league. And PFF had an interesting list where the Raiders were ninth on their defensive line rankings. How do you feel like the Raiders have matured at that position group compared to where they were in 2022 when Patrick Graham first came over?
You know, main thing was the growth of Max Crosby.
Okay.
Max Crosby just becoming more and more of a leader on the defense has really, you know, elevated the rest of the players. Even last year, a lot of the players were performing really well, like Adam Butler. You know, Malcolm Kuntz ended up having a breakout year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really built up how that defensive line looks, and just his leadership, too, and his growth as a leader is playing a big factor on that defensive line. And then when you add Christian Wilkins, it just elevates it a little bit more. You know, I think, you know, being ninth, you know, kind of having that respect that they have now, it has a lot to do with, of course, just what Max Crosby is and what he demands from the rest of his teammates. But, you know, adding in Christian Wilkins is going to uplift that, and, you know, what Christian Wilkins is going to demand for his teammates, you know, and hopefully Malcolm Kuntz can, you know, keep that run going of how he developed as a pass rusher last year and, you know, finding different ways for him to win and consistently getting better against the run. They're going to be the main engine for this team and on defense. I mean, for them to keep pushing the rest of this defense and getting after these quarterbacks, and, you know, especially a lot of the quarterbacks are in the AFC and these teams want to throw all over the yard, the Raiders have that defensive line to stop them. And also they have the defensive line to stop the run as well, because that's what Crosby does really well, and that's what Christian Wilkins has done his whole career, is stop the run really well. So you can see this defensive line being top 10, and, you know, maybe they end the year a little higher.
Marcus, we all love lists this time of year. We all love power rankings this time of year. You know, we're all trying to generate content and get us across the finish line for this offseason with training camp starting in a few weeks, and we can't wait for that. But an interesting one popped up on our radar yesterday, and that was Pro Football Talk, and Mike Florio put out their power rankings for 2024 and to start the season. And, of course, being the beat writer for the Raiders, I went to see, all right, what does Mike think about the Raiders? And lo and behold, he has them at number 26. And it tells me, and I want to ask you this question, it tells me that he's really, you know, not very high on the Raiders quarterback situation. Because when you look at the Raiders roster overall, it's a pretty darn good roster. It certainly isn't the sixth worst roster in the NFL. And we all understand that for the Raiders to reach their ceiling, it's predicated on the quarterbacks playing well. But at least for Mike Florio, it doesn't seem like he thinks that the Raiders quarterbacks are going to play good enough for them to avoid being the sixth worst team in the NFL. Do you feel like that's a little bit low for the Raiders? And if you were to put yourself in Mike's shoes, what do you think he was focused on?
Yeah, I think he's focused on the quarterbacks for sure. I think, you know, the quarterback situation, especially how they performed in minicamp and the reports got a minicamp, they're going to be pretty low on power rankings. I don't think people are going to be expecting those guys to get the job done. You know, even though, you know, Aiden O'Connell, you know, he finished 5-4 last year, you know, with Antonio Pierce, you might think that maybe somebody has bought into that, but most people just haven't. They just kind of ignored how O'Connell kind of finished the year. So, you know, and then add that in with the minicamp reports, yeah, you're definitely going to see people ranking them lower than that. But I also think it has a little bit to do with Antonio Pierce. I think a lot of the beat writers are very skeptical of Antonio Pierce. You can even see, like, Albert Breer, you know, he's basically assuming they're going to have to trade Max Crosby or Devontae Adams by the trade deadline, and a lot of those things, and kind of saying how, yeah, the players really like him, but how does that add it to the field, and a lot of those things. So I think it's a lot of it of them not believing in AP as much because just the way he got hired. So he got hired as an interim. You know, he really hasn't been a coach before. And, you know, he has a lot of bravado to him. He has them saying Raiders after games and stuff like that. So I think it has a lot to do with him and them kind of not seeing how the team was led. But also, I believe, too, a lot of people don't know how good the defense played last year. And they just ignore that, too. So I think it's a big factor. I think on defense, they played really, really well with basically the same players that they have coming back. And I think people are ignoring that and kind of focusing on the offense. But, I mean, they found a way to get it done with a bad offense last year and found ways to win games. And I think that, you know, they are sleeping on the defense still. I think that's the biggest thing people are sleeping on.
We're speaking with Marcus Johnson. Tape Don't Lie on YouTube at TheMarkJohnNFL on X. The recent TDL breakdown came out with two players, Adam Butler as well as Dylan Parham. Let's talk about the virtues of Adam Butler. I absolutely loved watching him last year because he provided so much push and so many different angles. And, you know, he would be double teamed at several times and still found ways to create pressure. Think about a year where, you know, he doesn't start any of the games. He comes in as a rotation, but 17 games, 4 passes defended, 5 sacks, 12 tackles for losses, 8 quarterback hits, 8 TFLs, 9 quarterback hits. This was such a productive year from Adam Butler. But this is kind of like what he was doing with the Miami Dolphins the year previous. What did you find when the tape shows what the good things that Adam Butler does? Because I'd love to see a return performance.
Yeah, I mean, one of the good things Adam Butler does, he has a lot of motor, so he's never going to stop rushing. You know, even if he might initially lose, he's going to find a different way to maybe make a move to get to the quarterback. And he is very effective in running stunts. That's something that Matt really pointed out, that he is very effective in like setting them up and helping out his teammates. So there's a lot of things that he does. Maybe he's more of an unsung hero with the defensive line because he's able to set up for other players and give them some free rushes when he mixes it up with stunts and a lot of those things. And he especially when he can come in there with Christian Wilkins on third down, it's going to create one-on-ones for the outside guys. I mean, Max Crosby is going to get some one-on-ones with Adam Butler out there just because he can get after the quarterback too. And he is that, you know, getting 5 sacks as a defensive tackle is, you know, especially back in the day, I mean, that's a pretty high number and still is for most defensive tackles, that especially with how much he's playing. There's a lot more defensive tackles that are on the field on third down more than he is. And he's able to still get some a lot of production. So you really see it's because of the motor that he has and the understanding of how the defensive line works and the stunts. And he definitely tells you he's a student of the game and a student of getting ready and prepared for the matchups that he's having because he's setting up the other players a lot. And I think that's what you get from Alan Butler. I think Butler has a chance to, you know, definitely be that third down guy again. And, you know, matching him up, you have Wilkins and him and, you know, Crosby, mm-hmm. and you have Kuntz out there, and you can mix it up and put Wilson out there and have that kind of rotation. That's what you're really going to see for this defensive line and why they have a chance to be one of the best in the league.
Marcus, I've been bandying this about my head for a while now, and I know that, you know, training camp and, you know, is going to get this kind of sorted out. But barring somebody, one of the quarterbacks, Gardner Minshew or Aiden O'Connell, you know, decidedly or decisively taking hold of the job in training camp, to me, it's going to have to, you're going to have to carry this into the preseason. And to make it, you know, fair, both guys have to play a little bit with the first team, you know, offense, fellow first teamers. If you were Antonio Pierce and faced with, you know, having to play your starters in the preseason, which a lot of coaches are averse to, and take the third game out of the equation because I don't think anybody's going to be playing in that game. How would you sort this out in terms of playing starters in those first two preseason games? And how would you handle who was playing first or game one, game two of the preseason when it comes to the quarterbacks?
See, the thing about the offense is I think they have a lot of depth over there. So, you know, I don't know, think they have to play Davante Adams in the preseason because when you have like Michael Gallup and you have, you know, Trey Tucker and you have Jacoby Myers, I mean, those guys can play over. You can still find a way to sit out Davante Adams and have those guys, mm-hmm. Other guys, you know, make some plays out there and still be kind of a first team. Because, you know, Michael Gallup was a starter last year, right? So you have him out there. It's still a little bit of that kind of first team feel a little bit. Then you have Trey Tucker. you're probably still going to have Michael Mayer, you're going to have Brock Bowers, who guys are going to be contributing. And then, you know, you're probably still going to have Zamir White out there. And it's probably with the offensive line, too. You probably still have Mumford out there and a lot of those players, and, you know, Dylan Parham, because they're learning a new system. So I think they're going to be able to do a good job, especially the first two games, of having those starters out there and having O'Connell and Minshew probably switch which game. I mean, O'Connell might start the first one, Minshew might start the second one, they might flip it. But I think with the depth they have on offenses, you don't have to play Devontae Adams in the preseason, because you have a guy like Michael Gallup, you have Trey Tucker, you have all those guys. They can come out there and play with the first team, because you know if there was injuries, I mean, that might be some of the players, I mean, playing with the quarterbacks anyway. So I still think that with the depth they have at some of those positions, I think they can, you know, put out some, you know, make sure those guys are comfortable. Because what the bad part of preseason is the offensive line. Like, if you could put those guys out there with a lot of the backups, you know, one guy might look worse than the other one. Yeah. And that's going to be a little bit of a tell of it, too. But I still think they have some depth there at some of those positions, because you could put Pete out there and Whitehair to even, you know, with some ones. And, you know, they might be playing at ones at some point this year. So I think that the overall depth that they have on offense will allow them to be flexible in the preseason, the first two games.
That's interesting you say that, because I was wondering, like, what kind of offensive line would either quarterback be also working with? Because you also understand that, you know, let's say for preseason week one, that's at Minnesota. Number two is home against the Dallas Cowboys. Sometimes it depends on the philosophy of the head coach of what kind of starters and what kind of talent they want to start the game with, and what do they want to get out of things. Because I also wonder, like, what kind of competition will either O'Connell and Gardner Minshew be going against?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big factor of it, too, is that, you know, on the other side, they might not be going against that, like, the top players. Because, you know,
yeah,
usually in the preseason these days, those guys don't play. I mean, they kind of sit everybody out. Like, they're not going to be facing Dak Prescott. Probably not going to be facing Michael Parsons. You're not going to be facing, you know, Deron Bland and players like that. But that's what I mean when the Raiders have depth, where, you know, Andres Pete might be out there with the first team, and, you know, on another team in the NFL, he might actually be a starter. So they have the depth to make sure that those guys still stay protected, and they'll be able to have a decent offensive line, whether or not they're playing Colton Miller, or maybe they decide to sit Andre James for a game or something like that, or anything like that. I think they have some definitely on the offensive line, which is key. Because, you know, even, you know, Delmar Glaze out there, you know, somebody like that, you still have different players that, especially at right tackle, that are out there, like Dalton Wagner, but those type of guys, they can play with the second team, and they can make sure that the depth of the offensive line is okay. Because, I mean, that's the main thing with preseason football, and why you can see it get a little ugly as the game goes along, because the offensive lines get worse, and the quarterbacks don't have time, and different numbers, and these guys got to be checking down all the time. That's what happens a little bit more as the game goes along in preseason. So as long as you have the best offensive line you can put out there, I think those quarterbacks will be okay.
Dylan Parham, right guard. Jackson Powers Johnson, left guard. How is that going to change the Raiders' offensive line?
I think it's going to change it tremendously. I think it's going to be a totally different look. I think Parham is very comfortable in the zone game. When they ran more zone last year, when we switched coordinators to Bo Hardigree, and they ran more of the zone run game, you saw a difference in Parham in the run game, especially when he's running running those type of run designs. He definitely has the athleticism to move laterally and, you know, perform what they call a reach block. And then you have Jackson Powers Johnson, who could he's just a monster in the run game, and he's just a really mean guy. So I think the system change with it, too, is going to make a big difference. You know, I think the running backs should have a different situation with that. You know, see how Zamir White moves into becoming more of a zone back from a power system. He was a power runner at Georgia, ran power in New England, with the Patriots system, with the Raiders. And then, you know, now he's moving into more of his own system, so it's going to be interesting to see the adjustment that he has in it. But I think the offensive line with those two, it's going to be pretty cool to see. You know, as long as they can stay healthy, the offensive line is going to be pretty damn good. I think they're going to be able to get a lot of movement, and especially if they stick to the zone run game, because that's something that Parham does really well. He's really good in the zone game. I really talked about that a lot in the last episode that we did, and kind of showed that the fluidness and all the things that he can do and the movement skills that he has, he's a perfect fit for it. And you have Jackson Powers Johnson, Andre James looks better in it, you know, and then Colt Miller can do whatever. So, you know, those guys, I think the offensive line has a chance to become one of the better offensive lines in the league.
You can also follow Marcus on X at TheMarkJohnNFL. And when you do, you'll get some interesting video snippets, some footage that he saves to kind of exemplify certain points. And this just recently about Michael Mayer. And not only talking about, you know, his ability to find holes in zone defense, but something about his ability to go after the ball on contested catches. What did the tape show?
Yeah, I think Michael Mayer definitely was coming on last year to end the season. Okay. I think, you know, if he would have ended the season, maybe, you know, Tom Telesco feels a different way about drafting Brock Bowers, you know. So
sure.
Even with that type of situation, I think that he has a chance just to become a really good tight end as well. And he just does a lot of, like, natural tight end things, like finding holes in zones, making himself available to the quarterback. You can throw the ball up to him, and he can catch the – doesn't matter where you put it, he's going to try to make a way to make that play. I mean, there was a play against the Jets that I didn't show online that he made that great catch in the Jets game, and then he had the one against the Lions, and then you just saw his growth, especially as a blocker, too. That's really where he's going to fit in. I think he's really developed into a good blocking tight end by the end of the year, and when he was getting more snaps, he kept getting better every single game, and I think that's going to roll over into the 2024 season. So I think when they get into these 12 personnel looks that Luke Getsy really likes to do, you're going to see him in those blocking situations and really open up some holes for the run game. Like last year, he was very key on the Josh Jacobs long run against the Chiefs. So that was a very, very key block that Michael Mayer made, so he can kind of spring open and find that hole. So I think Mayer has a good chance to definitely get more targets than people think as well. And just because he's going to be on the field a little bit more than Brock Bowers, in my opinion, just because this is going to be a running football team, and I feel like that's going to be their mentality. So I expect him to be on the field a little bit more than Brock Bowers. Okay. So he might have some more opportunities to get more targets, and I think he just is still a good wide receiver, and you know he shouldn't be slept on, in my opinion.
I'm glad you mentioned the targets because it was a pet peeve of mine all year last year. 40 targets for Michael Mayer. Unacceptable. Just unacceptable. I know they wanted to grow him out as a blocker and all that, but you had this valuable dude that when you put the ball in his hands, he was going to make things happen. But for whatever reason, 2.8 targets per game, 40 for the season, unacceptable. So I ask you, for Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers, where do you want to see their targets by the end of the year for both players?
You know, I would like to see them around the 70 and 80 range.
Me
for
too.
Both players. Because I think, you know, with them being a smash mouth football team, they're going to play around, in my opinion, they're going to play around Devontae Adams for sure. He's going to be the main target guy. Then they're going to play around Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers. And I think those guys are going to share a little bit. And I think, you know, Trey Tucker and Jacoby Myers are going to fill in their roles. You know, Trey Tucker's always going to be that deep guy, so he's going to get those targets. And, you know, Jacoby Myers is especially on third down, I think Jacoby Myers is where he's going to really show how effective he is this year, especially when they probably move him more inside like they should. He's going to be more comfortable there because he's played there his whole career. But, you know, when you still have to throw on first and second down, and that's why I think those targets are going to come in for Brock Bowers and Michael Mayer. One, because I think Brock Bowers is going to get some screens. He's going to get those type of passes. You know, I think they're going to find creative ways to get him the football, maybe you know, him getting the ball out of the flat, you know, him maybe him running some choice routes out of the backfield. They're going to find different ways to get him the football. But I think Aiden O'Connell had a little bit of chemistry, I believe, with Michael Mayer, like understanding where he's going to be in zones, and they had a good understanding with each other. So I think that, you know, he's going to lean on Michael Mayer a little bit too. So I really see that the main three target guys are going to be Michael Mayer, Devontae Adams, and Brock Bowers, and they're going to mix it in with those three. Of course, Adams is going to get the most because he deserves to get the most, but I think they're going to mix it in with Michael Mayer and Brock Bowers, and you probably see them as like the next two highest in yards on this football team. I mean, maybe, you know, Trey Tucker, depending on how he takes off, you know, and Jacoby Myers, like I said, he's Mr. Consistent. So, you know, those guys might eat into the targets a little bit, but I still expect on the first and second down, you're going to see a lot of Brock Bowers. You're going to see a lot of Michael Mayer. So they're going to get a lot of targets.
Go on to YouTube. I tell you every week, make sure you subscribe to Tape Don't Lie and find out the great work that's being uncovered from Marcus Johnson and his crew. What's in the lab this week as you're working on TDL?
So, you know, I got another episode coming up. You know, I will be covering Michael Mayer And it looks like Matthew's going to do a Marcus Epps. So check out that episode. That should be up tomorrow. We do a Michael Mayer and Marcus Epps. And then Friday Night Live will be back this week, so we'll be doing that. And, of course, I'm doing a lot more deep diving into Luke Getsy's offense. So definitely been a look at those videos. Those just pop out randomly. So definitely just be kind of grinding that in the summer and try to figure out what he likes to do, what looks he likes to do, what downs does he like to go in certain looks, and kind of how he's going to spread out, do a lot of the 12 personnel. So definitely going to be deep diving into Luke Getsy and kind of just checking out what he really likes to do.
Great stuff. Marcus, I absolutely love when you come on. Thank you for doing it. Really appreciate your time. Let's do it again next week.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. At the Mark John NFL Tape, Don't Lie on YouTube. And I love some of that stuff, especially when you think about more targets for Michael Mayer.
You have to.
I like how he ended that. Like, you might see him on the field more than Bowers because of some of the responsibilities he needs to have.
Yeah, I agree. Because, you know, Michael Mayer has already shown that he can be an asset in the blocking game and in the run game. I still think that you're still going to be able to run out of 12 personnel a lot, actually. And I think Brock Bowers is going to, whether you line him up on the line of scrimmage or in the slot, taking people's heads off as a run blocker downfield. So I still think you're going to see Bowers on the field quite a bit. But mm-hmm. I think off the out of the gate, when you go to 11 personnel, maybe Michael Mayer stays on the field as a result of some of the all-around play that he has. But for me, more importantly, is by the end of the year and per game, how many targets, how many times are you trying to get these two guys the ball? And we've gone through that exercise earlier this offseason and done the math. And there's teams that have shown in 12, utilizing two tight ends a lot, the Patriots being, the forebearers of that. You can get a wide receiver well over 100 targets. You can get another wide receiver in that 70-80 target range. And you can also get your two tight ends, 100 to 80 or 80 to 100 targets as well. There's no excuse, no reason why, especially if the quarterback is playing efficient football, you're not going to be able to spread the ball around. And when you have weapons like Michael Mayer, I would just sit there in the press box going, what are they thinking? And there were times where he was wide open too, and he wasn't even an option. And I'm like, every time you guys get the ball to this guy, he's running people over and he's making yardage, and he's making positive plays. What's the problem with trying to do that a little bit more? It just didn't make any sense to me. It is what it is. Going into this year, you have to increase those touches because both he and Brock Bowers, with the ball in their hands, are going to make things happen. And for an offense that languished, that had such a hard time, holding on to the ball and creating first down situations and prolonged drives and certainly scoring points, how do you just let, a weapon like that fall by the wayside? So that can't happen again.
It's Raider Nation Radio, the morning tailgate here on R&R 920. We'll read some more thoughts and texts up on the text line at 702-365-9200 on your Players Only Mount Rushmore here on Raider Nation Radio. Who is on your Raiders Only Players Only Mount Rushmore? We'll get your thoughts on the other side.
Headed to New York, Clay, tonight, later on tonight. I can't wait. We had to go suit shopping last night.
Beautiful.
I got a wedding to go to on Saturday. It's going to be one of those rooftop New York City weddings. So I had to, I got to get cleaned up. And that was quite the expense, by the way. So it's all good and I'm happy to do it. But it's going to be an expensive trip, Clay. You're going to New York City. The hotels,
I can imagine,
for 5 nights. You got all this food. How can you say no? I'm going to try to be disciplined, but I know the kids are going to want to eat great food. My wife's going to want to eat great food.
Oh, they're going to want spending money. They're going to want stuff
shopping.
And bring home.
My daughter, who is 17 years old, you think she's going to come home empty-handed?
No, she's going to take a room at Saks.
Yeah, exactly. So this thing's going to cost me a pretty penny. Clay. It just is the constant reminder that money is always of the essence and we always need it. We never have enough. I don't care how much you make, you just don't have enough. So here's the deal. Maybe you're in a situation right now where you need $500 to $5,000. Maybe something came up. Maybe you're going to New York. If you are, say hi. I'll see you out there. But if you're in that kind of a situation and you need cash like right now, and maybe your credit cards are maxed out or your credit's not where it needs to be, and maybe you're losing some sleep over, hey, I got to get this money like right now. Don't worry about it. Because for over 20 years, the experts at LendingStore.com have helped millions of people who needed cash quickly, and all types of credit are welcome. Trust me when I say this. Cash is as close as your phone and as soon as tomorrow. When you need cash, you need it now, so why wait? Look, just go over to LendingStore.com. It's the easiest thing in the world, LendingStore.com. You got to fill out a couple of fields. It takes, 5 minutes or so. And let them help you find a lender that can get you $500 or $5,000 as early as tomorrow. Just go over to LendingStore.com right now for all the details and stop worrying.
Here's Marcus Allen. Cutting back upfield, and Marcus Allen could be gone. 74 yards for Marcus Allen. And the Raiders are starting to shove this one in the winner's column.
Holy Toledo, Marcus Allen has just claimed full title of all world for 1983.
Coach, Tom Flores.
Yes, Mr. President.
I have already had a call from Moscow. They think that Marcus Allen is a new secret weapon, and they insist that we dismantle it.
Raider Nation Radio back with the calls on your players only Mount Rushmore.
Who
We're getting some great thoughts there.
Right there.
That was Pat Summerall.
Jeez, Pat was understated right there.
I'm going to talk in the same tone of voice for both teams.
I mean, usually when something big happened, he was great at it. It felt like he was just like, I don't know, he just really understated on that.
It was like a long Sunday, it seemed like, you know?
Yeah.
Play third quarter. Here's Marcus Allen. Cutting back upfield, and Marcus Allen could be gone. 74 yards for Marcus Allen.
I mean, it's not enough.
Maybe he was hearing all the TVs getting turned off, but nobody turns off the TV.
It's Super Bowl 18. Come on, Pat.
Yeah, so he needed that. That was one. Hall of Famer, love Pat Summerall. Maybe not one of his most inspired calls of all time.
We're getting some great thoughts on the text line at 702-365-9200. Who's your Mount Rushmore, your players only? Raider Mike sending in Jack Tatum.
Mm.
Cliff Branch.
Yeah.
Lester Hayes saying, I just love the style.
Yeah.
And when I was playing corner, that's how I crouched the hands above the ground. And, of course, Snake, the band leader of this misfit nation of ours, Kenny Stabler. Those are good for Mike in the 925. Otto, Stabler, Allen, Seawood. Thanks, Napa, Mike. I also see from Marcus, Roloff Raider, Kenny Stabler, Gene Upshaw, Marcus Allen, Willie Brown. You know, there should be like a Mother's Day Mount Rushmore for Willie Brown, always reminding us that Mother's Day is coming on the NFL draft. Great call on that.
No doubt. And again, it's really difficult. There's probably a good 12, yeah. You know, and depending on what era your favorite era was, maybe even more that are worthy of being on the Mount Rushmore. And it's not like that for every franchise. And I know Raider fans, understand that if you, there's certain teams, like we were mentioning the Cardinals. I mean, I was looking at they had Larry Fitzgerald, absolutely, without question, worthy of that. Dan Dierdorf was on.
Oh, yeah. Dan Dierdorf was an absolute Cardinal, for sure. Yeah.
Larry Doby, Kurt Warner. But here's the thing. Kurt Warner was there how long?
Right. But it gets you to the promised land. It gets you into a...
Yeah, but I'm just saying that it just shows you. They've had a long history. The Cardinals have been around a long time. They go back to Chicago. They were the Chicago, the Chicago Cardinals. They moved to St. Louis, didn't work out in St. Louis. They moved to Arizona. So they've been a little bit of a nomad, but the amount of years are there.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was a kid, they were always just sort of an afterthought. You know, they've had a few moments in Arizona.
Well, it'd be like when you get those football cards, those Topps football cards. You're like, oh, more Cardinals? I can't do anything with this.
So for it's when you're telling me that Kurt Warner, who played there, I don't know, how many years would you say that he played there?
Kurt? It was like 3 years, wasn't it?
I mean, when you're saying that a player that was there 3 years and didn't even win you the Super Bowl, sorry, but they didn't win.
Sure.
Is part of your Mount Rushmore. That tells me about the history of your team. And that's not to take anything away from Kurt Warner. You know, he led multiple teams to Super Bowls. It's not a slight on him. It's just that, usually when you're talking about a Mount Rushmore for a team, they've been there 10 years, 8 years, 5 years, 6 years, whatever,
mm-hmm.
and did great things. But it just tells you where the Cardinals franchise is compared to the Raiders, because you can easily find, you know, 12 to 13, 14 players that would justifiably be on the Raiders' Mount Rushmore.
Oh, nice. Travis from Channel 13 just texts in, I'd put Pat Tillman on the Arizona Cardinals list. All right. Yeah, why not?
No,
you know what?
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, you're thinking about those who are honored and still remember.
He's a great player, too. And he retired at the height of his career, or at least set aside football at the height of his career to go serve his country, which is, you know, so honorable. But, yeah, so I think Pat Tillman is somebody that somehow, some way, and he is, you know, to just be immortalized in that Cardinal uniform.
Thank you so much for all the participation on the text line. We're trying to get to them all. We really, really appreciate it. Well, fantastic stuff. We'll go through them the next time we meet up here on Raider Nation Radio. But coming up next, it's Street Legal with Ash the attorney, Ash Watkins from Sam and Ash Law. All right, here we go. Every Wednesday at this time, it's time to get Street Legal with Ash Watkins from Sam and Ash Injury Law. Bam! With the new phone number, 702-303-0333. If you're injured in a crash, you call Sam and Ash, 702-303-0333. Available in both Nevada and in California. Ash, thank you so much for joining us today. Good morning to you. And you know what? There's something that's in the news about DraftKings. And a customer is suing DraftKings in an alleged $500,000 extortion plot. Here's the rub. Okay, out of the filing that was obtained from Queens County, a man was threatened by somebody in a mask near his home, saying that he was grabbed, violently spun around, and threatened to kill if he did not pay $500,000. Apparently, this gentleman had that kind of money in his DraftKings account, and he claims that DraftKings gave over his personal information and financial history to this person that robbed him. How do you think this is going to come out? Because how does anybody try to prove that DraftKings was responsible for this extortion plot?
Yeah, I mean, this is this is wild, Clay. I mean, the idea of someone assaulting you and forcing mm-hmm. you to pay these kinds of amounts. Look, it's going to come down to communications within DraftKings itself, between employees, between the individuals involved. This is the discovery phase of these types of litigation. You know, you file the lawsuit, that's step one. And then step two is proving your case. And how do you do that? You make various requests on the other side. So this John Doe plaintiff is going to send out requests to DraftKings and any other entities and individuals that he's sued. And he's going to ask for text messages, emails between various individuals, emails that mention his account, emails that mention this Sparky Kirolos' account, anything like that. And then they're going to talk about private information security and whether this breach and breaches like this have occurred before and DraftKings is aware of these situations and hasn't taken reasonable steps to protect customers from situations like this. So it's going to be a long process, and DraftKings is just going to get a lawyer and they're going to say, we had no idea. Yeah, we're not responsible.
Yeah, then, and that's the thing. Like, you have to prove it. But somewhere along the line in the chain of command, the address of his email was changed. And according to, like, you know, for certain mobile online books like DraftKings, like DK, is like, all right, if the address is, email changed and you could change the password, next thing you know, you got somebody's account right at your own and it got emptied out. I wonder how they can find through the chain and the protocol of how that unauthorized email address was changed, because that's really the crux of the matter. Somebody had to do that.
Yeah, and you know, look, the internet, it'll take a very sophisticated enterprise to cover up the digital fingerprints and footprints that have happened. You know, everything's got an IP address. Everything is virtually traceable down to the street corner of where something happens. And so that's going to be part of the investigation, which computer authorized or initiated this email address change. So, yeah, I'm sitting back with my popcorn and ready to see how this plays out. And if there's any truth to this, I would anticipate this is the first and only time we really hear about this story, as DraftKings will try and settle it and get some confidentiality out of it.
That was my next question. We're speaking with Ash from SalmonAshLaw.com. Sam and Ash Injury Law. If you're injured in a crash, you call Sam and Ash, 702-303-0333. That's the perception. Anytime there is a perception around, you know, is there improprieties? Is this safe? Is my money safe? Are my accounts safe? Most corporations will go and try to find, like, all right, what's the number here that we try to make you happy? In this case, for Spanky, you know, normally Alfalfa makes his bets, but Spanky wants his 500 grand back. What kind of terms are, how long do you let this go in the news? Because at this point, nothing good can come out of this, because the perception will be something's wrong at this particular establishment.
Yeah, and you know, every minute that goes by where people feel like their accounts aren't safe or their information isn't safe with DraftKings, you know, that's lost revenue and potentially lost existing business,
yeah,
which will add up for DraftKings. So I anticipate this resolving pretty quickly one way or another. Either DraftKings knows they have nothing to do with it, and so they will put on a hard fight. But if they have any iota of concern that their employees were involved in this, or that there was some type of breach that they were negligent or could have done or handled better, that we won't hear it. And again, look, he's going to want the $500K back. And then also there's going to be some amount that has to be added for the delay. You know, my 500, you know, I don't have my 500K for 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. So there'll be some level of interest added. And then look, you want confidentiality? Seems like that's an expensive ask too. So you'll have to add that back on. And so this could cost DraftKings some money.
You know, and we're speaking about how settlements can kind of change perception around certain organizations. For the Washington Commanders, they now have to pay $1.3 million to settle a bunch of season ticket deposits that were never remitted. Can you imagine this? Like, so when the Commanders, and Daniel Snyder was the head of that, apparently they accrued a ton of season ticket holder deposits that were never refunded. They were never, they just kind of like went unclaimed. And next thing you know, this thing is going through an ownership change. There's all sorts of other news coming in and around. And the season ticket holders, they're getting lost in the shuffle. This is a confusing investigation, but how do you feel like the Commanders were taking deposits and not returning them to their customers?
Well, that's just, it's unlawful. You know, these customers and season ticket holders, they put down a giant chunk of money to reserve a spot to get their season tickets. They obviously purchased season tickets and then they didn't get their deposit, or it wasn't credited to their sale. And so what the Commanders did is they had this whole pot of money that really wasn't theirs and they weren't entitled to keep, and they had an obligation to return to individuals, and they didn't do it. And that's why you're seeing this as an attorney general coming in and running the investigation and going and reaching this settlement. They want to make sure that the deposits are repaid, and then also they're levying a fine, and it's to punish the organization for what they did, to reimburse the government for the cost of the investigation, and also to send a message to the other teams. Like, if you've got a deposit sitting somewhere in your bank accounts, start sending them back.
Yes, because there's a big-time problem with that money just sitting there, not going anywhere. And you wonder, like, how do I have a voice? The attorney general in every state, that's where you make that first call. Because you definitely want to see what can they do on their own, because they can often wield the justice very swiftly. Ash, we're out of time. We thank you so much for coming on today. If you're injured in a crash, hurt in a crash, you call Sam and Ash, 702-303-0333. You call, they listen, and you win. They do it all the time, and they make such a community balance and improvement here in Southern Nevada from day one since they moved here. And we want you to be a part of it. Available both in Nevada and California, SalmonAshLaw.com. Ash, have a great weekend. We look forward to talking again next week.
All right. Thanks, Clay. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's Ash, the attorney, up on X and Salmon Ash Law as well. Make sure you go online, Salmon Ash Law, here on Raider Nation Radio. We're out of time. We thanks for all the guests. Catch our podcast page, lvsportsnetwork.com. Vinny is in New York, and I'm taking a couple days off. We will see you next week here on Raider Nation Radio.